This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Tuesday, March the 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Today we'll hear excerpts from the Corn Panel, the discussion that took place at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, at the Will Ag Farm Dock Spring Outlook this week. The panelists included Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Mike Zuzla of GlobalComResearch.com, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities. On Tuesday, I asked each of them for some opening comments. Matt Bennett kicked us off.
Whenever you talk about old corn, people keep wanting to know, what should I do with my old corn? And the thing is, we got to understand is whenever you look at 21, the 21 crop, that crop went in the ground cheap. We all know that. If you've still got old corn around, that's great. I'm not necessarily bearish by any means, but at the same time, we've seen a significant increase in value, you know. And so, you know, how long are you going to want to hold on to that? I think we need to hold on to some old corn in a little bit longer than what we typically do, because I think you could see some fireworks this year. But at the same time, I don't want to let it all ride. I think we can do some of that on paper and put some of that money in our pocket on new crop corn. To me, I don't know if you, I wrote an article last week for Farm Futures, and you know, I just basically was trying to encourage people to understand, in 2008, if you guys remember, people didn't think that the market was going to break. And then you guys remember what that break felt like, because we were still in the elevator business, and it was significant. And we were sure glad to see it, quite frankly, because we were in the elevator business, and we had so much freaking money margined, it was ridiculous. And whenever that market finally broke, you know, a lot of folks got caught without having enough corn sold. The unfortunate thing is that, you know, you dropped the market almost $5 from midsummer time frame until Dees went off the board. It was a significant drop. And then you look over at 2012, totally different ballgame. And in 2012, I mean, how many of us sold too soon? Now, how many of us already this year feel like we sold too soon? And I know you're not, well, I saw one hand raise. There's one honest person in the whole room, right? But several of us feel that way, correct? We feel like we sold too soon. But if you sold too soon at a profitable level, that's not a bad place to reside. So my challenge for producers is to, A, not sit on your hands and do nothing. These are fantastic prices, and nobody knows what tomorrow's going to bring. But, B, don't get oversold on physical bushels without flexibility, because if you do, it could be a devastating run for you this summer, because I could see some serious fireworks if we end up without the kind of production that we need given the circumstances.
That's Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net kicking off the corn panel at the Spring Outlook that took place at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 8th day of March. His comments there related to 2012 and the elevator business reminded me that earlier this week on Monday, when we talked with Greg Johnson of TGM, Total Grain Marketing here in Champaign, I asked him about some issues that elevators must deal with and that farmers must be aware of as the price of corn, other commodities go much higher, and the margin calls for elevators go up, especially in the state of Illinois, because of the way the state laws are put forth. In Illinois, every time an elevator buys a bushel of grain, they must hedge that bushel if they've not received it yet. It's a law that's supposed to help protect both the grain elevator and the farmer. Here's Greg Johnson.
Well, the one potential issue, it's not an issue yet, but it could be if prices continue to go higher, is the amount of money that elevators have to borrow to maintain margin calls in Chicago. For example, if we buy corn at $6 a bushel, we hedge that corn on the Chicago Board of Trade. And if corn goes to $7 a bushel, we have to send another dollar a bushel to Chicago to margin that account. Now, when we sell the corn in the fall for $7, let's say, we make our dollar in the cash market and we lose a dollar in the futures market, but we're perfectly hedged. So we get the money back, but it's just more of a timing issue that we have to send that money to Chicago or to the banks for the next 5-6 months until we get that back. And that all costs money, and there's a limit as to how much money banks will be willing to loan elevators, even though they understand the whole system of hedging. There's still a limit as to the dollar amount. And So elevators ran into this a little bit in 2012, the last time we had extremely high prices. And that's the fear, is that if prices continue to go higher, that we could see some curtailment of how much money is available to hedge grain. And if you can't hedge grain, obviously we're not going to speculate. So then there would be no bids out there. But we're not to that point yet, and people are, you know, thinking about that ahead of time now. So it shouldn't catch us by surprise. So I think people are trying to, you know, work with their bankers now and try to make financing arrangements so that that kind of thing does not happen again this year.
Yeah, so the problem there is that once you get to the point where the bank says no, despite the fact that you're perfectly hedged and will get the money back, is that you can't really purchase more. Correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Because if we bought more without hedging, then we would be speculating, and that's a surefire recipe to lose money.
If I remember correctly, you guys, I mean, you have to hedge, right? In the state of Illinois, that is.
Oh, Yeah. You're allowed a speculative position of like 50,000 bushels over the whole company. So, I mean, but that's nothing. I mean, when you're hedging millions of bushels a day, 50,000 is nothing.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Again, those comments were made Monday of this past week by Greg Johnson from TGM in Champaign, Illinois. I wanted to make sure to understand that this was an Illinois law and that some other states do not actually require elevators to hedge their future purchases. So I called Jeff Akison. He is the executive director of the Illinois Grain and Feed Association, and asked him.
Sure, be happy to. Just, you know, real briefly, and as it relates to this particular topic, the Illinois Grain Code does require elevators, you know, to hedge their grain, to be in position. There's a certain amount of wiggle room in that, as far as, you know, how much you're long or short, because it's awful hard for an elevator to hedge exactly bushel for bushel when you're dealing with certain size contracts on the Chicago Board of Trade. But yes, we are required to hedge the grain, you know, have an offsetting position with the futures market. And now, it's not that way with every other state. You just hedge state by state kind of thing. Of course, some states may not have, depends on their regulations and what it is, and people really need to be able to check with their State Department of Agriculture or the agency that would govern their particular transactions, or perhaps their State Grain and Feed Association.
And this grain code was put in place because elevators have gotten into issues in the past, and it's a protection for both the grain elevators and the farmers.
Absolutely. It I believe it has made the, in many, many respects, has made the industry here in Illinois stronger than perhaps some other places. But there unfortunately have been some situations. It's been years ago, but there have been situations where elevators perhaps were doing something incorrectly. They didn't have the limits in place years ago, and this has been put into place to help put guardrails on it for the industry, as well as help protect the producers.
And one final issue: has the Grain and Feed Association talked with elevators this year about how to mitigate issues should they show up later in the year based on the very high price of grain?
Well, I think we just had our annual convention, and I know that was a topic there at the convention, where individuals were, you know, both in the halls and in the meeting rooms talking about this particular issue. But, our main message probably to our members is make sure you're talking to your banker, understand what their limits are and what their guidelines are, and work with them on a specific situation as you go through this marketing year.
Again, that was Jeff Akison. He's the executive director of the Illinois Grain and Feed Association. I talked to him Monday. Now let's switch back to the Tuesday corn panel at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Mike Zuzlo drove in from Atchison, Kansas. He's with GlobalComResearch.com.
I guess the big picture mindset with wheat, Todd, is that the Ukrainian war, we can call it now, is the perfect example in an economics textbook of cost push inflation, where you lock up supplies, you don't know if you're going to get the available supplies, you don't know if you're going to be able to ship out the available supplies, and now we don't know if we're going to be able to plant the new crop supplies in Ukraine especially. And so this cost push inflation is important, because what it typically does historically, and this kind of dovetails in Bruce's presentation, is cost push inflation usually is energy driven. It's not demand driven, and therefore it really gets the attention of the Federal Reserve and the central banks. And so right when inflation's going up, they start hearing the screaming of the $4.50 gas prices, they start ratcheting up interest rates, and all of a sudden we start taking demand down and knocking demand down and cutting it off at the knees. I believe in 2022 we could see historical demand erosion if we keep up this current pace and price action. So this leads me to maybe the most important thing I can say today for my analysis. If it's cost push inflation, and I think it is, then we look at 1974, we look at late 2008, and we look at 2012. Those are my model years for a supply, weather, cost push inflation driven market. And what that means to you all is what I saw today. The most valuable piece of news I saw today was not Russia and about the United States cutting the energy from Russia. It was that the London Metals Exchange canceled nickel trade. A 145-year-old exchange shut down the nickel trade because nickel prices went over $100,000 a ton. What does that do to demand? So this is what we have to look forward to in 2022. So if you're sitting back today saying, I'm not going to hedge, I'm going to let this thing ride, I'm telling you, it does not work out well for you if it's a cost push inflation drive, even if you're a farmer.
Jackie Vakes.
Well, I'm going to tag on to Mike from the standpoint of wheat. Why does wheat bother me? Well, partially what Mike is talking about, because wheat feeds people. And when wheat feeds people, think about the products you buy at the grocery store. Other than fruits and vegetables, just about everything has wheat in it. And when food prices go up, consumer confidence goes down, and it backs up exactly what Mike's talking about. The Fed steps in and we start to see issues. And so I think, you know, as you look at the big picture, and I'm going to roll back to what's going on in the markets, over the years, of course, we've seen the algorithmic trading come into the marketplace. Managed money is here. Index funds, first time that I can remember in a long, long time that the index funds are in here and they're hedging inflation. Another major player. Another player that we'd never talk about is exchange-traded futures. Exchange-traded futures are futures that can be traded at the stock market. And they are being traded. Wheat is being traded like crazy at the stock market right now. In all the years, now I've got 24 years in sitting in this chair, I have never seen wheat locked limit up 6 days in a row, but locked limit up with over 200,000 contracts sitting at limit waiting to buy. It's just, it's more or less unheard of. So I'm totally in the camp with Mike in terms of don't think you can just sit back. I'm not a bear. I think we can still go higher, but I'll tell you what, there are plenty of factors in the background that can make this extremely uncomfortable for all of you.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Wow, these markets are something else. We look like maybe we have seen a little bit of a, I won't say top, I'll just say a plateau here or whatever. I would like to take a survey right now. There's three answers to this. You're going to stay the same on your rotation, you're going to plant more beans, or you're going to plant more corn than you have over the last few years. First off, one is, am I going to stay pretty close to the same rotation? Would you hold up your hand? Okay, that's too many to count. How many more beans? Cup, okay. How many more corn? I've talked to quite a few seed corn meetings this year for seed dealers. You guys are right in there. It's 80 to 90% unchanged. One week when beans were really going, beans were a little better for on a small field, and then maybe a little more corn like this. I think we saw, Gary told us this morning that corn is a little more per acre income right now. I think that's going to depend on, as we look at the availability of nitrogen fertilizer, as we get a little closer to planting here. I think hopefully a lot of you got it on, or you got at least got it priced. But I think the farmers in this area are going to plant corn. It's been the lagger so far. It hasn't really rallied with everything else. And we think with the situation in the Ukraine, the situation in South America, the idea that we think that there's going to be some business brought back in here, that corn is going to start to pick up. My people in the commercial industry are telling me that the barges are tight. It's 900% freight on barges. When we saw the market sell off hard the other day, that was when the banks forced loans. They wouldn't give the elevators any more money for margin money. And they had hedges on. So they went to the cash market. If you notice, the cash corn dropped about 50 cents as far as your difference between the board and what it is, which are your basis levels like that. We've sort of got that ironed on through here now, and I think that we're going to probably see corn continue to work on up. Ethanol is way cheaper than the crude oil that makes up gasoline. Why don't we just go to E15 and we got 5% less that we have to buy from Russia, Venezuela, or Iran?
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, rounded out our panel.
Great to be here, too. I guess the bottom line is volatility. If you go back to some of the recordings from last summer, last fall, we talked about volatility, but not volatility like this. It's just huge, unbelievable. Not crop insurance volatility, but option volatility over 100% in some cases. And it's so dang volatile that last Friday at 120, I never saw such a welcome close in my life. I tell you what, you guys, us guys, everybody's wore out, and it was a welcome about 2 days off. Then all heck broke loose again on Sunday night. It's just unbelievable. You've got commodity funds, corporations, elevators, just, you know, everybody's getting one way, one time, the next way, the next, and it's just huge, huge movement, huge, huge volume. I think if just about anything is gaming through here, I think the thing that I fear the most is things that we cannot control, and there's a lot of that out there. We've seen that, and of all years to have some type of plan or strategy, I think this is it. A lot of people we've talked to is crop insurance. That's a good start, but I think there's some other options or other plans you need to really look at here. I believe that volatility is only going to get worse from here on out, and I truly believe this is probably going to be the big time, the final push that Bull the Bob has been looking for about 25 years.
Let's talk a little bit about Ukraine as it's related to corn and to wheat both. Black box trade, of course, can trigger lots of things on the way up and on the way down. A lot of money moves and technicals get hit. Things move quickly and there's volatility. However, on the fundamental side, a crop, part of a crop, is not being used or shipped out of Ukraine for corn and or wheat out of Russia and Ukraine. It seems to me we've talked a lot about Ukrainian farmers not being able to get in because of available supplies, but that Russian farmers may have very well the same issues, just without the war around them. They simply can't get in. They won't have fuel. They won't have available supplies to move product. And this has to happen in the next 3 months. At some point, taking those supplies or part of those supplies out of the marketplace for a full year, what impact does it really have on corn, and when do you see it come into the marketplace for the United States? Who comes in to buy and when? And does it have, and am I right in terms of the impact that it might have, that kind of impact?
Well, it's funny you ask it. While I was sitting over there, I had a question that came from Bloomberg, and they wanted to know if the United States had enough wheat to be able to cover anything that wasn't going to come out of the Ukraine or out of Russia. And when I went through and figured it all out, we had about 39 million metric tons available, and they would be down about 59 million metric tons, which would leave us short about 20 million metric tons to be able, and that's taking everything we have. Now, that's after our feed use, that's after our, that's including almost 20 million metric tons of ending stock. So basically, we just wouldn't have enough, Todd, to be able to do it. So the other part of their question was, well, what about Canada? What about Australia? What about, you know, would they be able to do some kind of an initiative? And, you know, one of the things in the background is we have countries right now that are going to hang on to exportable goods. They're not necessarily going to be willing to fill up, you know, and give away theirs. Canada, well, we heard Eric this morning. Canada, it may have another really tough year. They couldn't afford to give it away. So it's going to be questionable. And I know the guys in Ukraine are saying, you know, that they don't believe they're going to get their corn crop in the way that they should either, which you can imagine. But it's just a very difficult situation. I think that I guess, Mike, you can attest to this. Everybody underestimates wheat, right?
Well, it goes back to the 2011-2012 time period. I think that we would have had a much quicker high in the market had we not had a Corn Belt drought, because we had in 2011 Arab Spring. And Arab Spring was that major uprising led by Egypt. And I think Egypt is the powder keg for the world, in my opinion, at this point. Because I think they take like 63% or 65% of their wheat comes from Russia and Ukraine. Over 80% or almost 80% of their vegetable oils, sunflower oil, come from Ukraine and Russia. I think we're in line with another, and this is, I'm talking like 2-3 quarters down the road, we're in line for another really severe, massive food crisis and energy crisis, one that we've never experienced in our lives in this room, I believe. And I think we really got to start thinking about how are we going to handle this with the short term looking so bullish, so friendly, especially if the drought in Kansas maintains what it is. I mean, not only do you have the Ukraine and Russia and what little drought left in Canada, but you also have this massive drought in the hard red wheat belt, where clients in Texas that I have are planting a month early right now corn because they know that a month from now the seed won't come up. They're so dry. So they're just going after the available soil moisture. I had a good conversation on the way over here with the same client talking about what should I go to other than corn. And I think, you know, the vegetable oils, the sunflower seeds, because it was a fertilizer, and he's irrigated. And so we're just totally out of the box on what we're dealing with right now. And it goes really back to the issue of what this Ukrainian conflict started. It started with the energies, and it's now led by the European wheat market. The European wheat market is almost, the soft red wheat is almost trading 1-to-1 with the European wheat market right now. And I think this is really crucial right now, because we've got March expiration on March 14th. March 14th is right after the USDA report this week. And so I think this could be a consolidation phase for the wheat to take another move higher at this point. Why? Because the crude oil market may continue to go higher after the report. So this is what we're going to have to deal with. And I think you bring up some huge points, Todd.
I don't know if you saw this, Todd, but Russia made the announcement here about 45 minutes ago that they're going to ban the export of products and raw materials out of Russia until December 31st. You know, the thing is, there's unprecedented volatility that's probably going to be in front of us. And I think anytime you hear this type of thing, or you hear potentially explosive prices, I think as a producer, our mentality is to not do anything with the market and just let this thing play out. I am not necessarily bearish by any means, but at the same time, as a producer, you know, you're looking at a spring insurance price of $5.90, and we're 50 cents above that, and it was set last Monday. Stop and think about that. The amount of money that's flowed into the producer's pocket, if you choose to do something with it already, is a excellent level for a producer to at least manage risk. And so there's a lot of different tools in your toolbox that you can use at this point in time, but certainly doing nothing, in my opinion, is probably not going to be the best choice.
So there are lots of black swan events. There's a disaster looming. You already mentioned destabilization, that is, in Egypt potentially. This happened the last time around. It was a Russian drought, if I remember correct. Somebody mentioned that it was a Ukrainian drought. I'm pretty certain it was partially in Ukraine, but it was mostly a Russian drought. And did they put on, they embargoed wheat, correct? They embargoed wheat, and then GrainCorp, I think, was on, yeah. And that triggered a destabilization in Egypt for bread and food supplies, remember? And then the Mideast ticked off with the Arab Spring. So there's just so much happening here.
The bottom line is how much is going to be available. Are these countries going to ban exports and hoard and so forth? And this just adds fuel to the fire on the new crop production or this coming growing season.
The one thing as we look at all this is I think we're going to have supply this year because our crops, you know, we're going to get in. Most all of you guys have got your fertilizer booked in for this year. South America has got most of their crops planted for coming to be harvested for this year. Who knows if Ukraine's going to be able to ship anything in or out. We're just going to call that sort of frozen or whatever along the way. 85% of Brazil's fertilizer is imported. 9 million tons comes from Eastern Europe. 95% of the potassium comes from Belarus. 3 million tons of it comes from Russia. Russia's 21% of all of Brazilian nitrogen. They are so worried in Brazil, their Congress is taking into effect a bill that would allow extraction of minerals from indigenous lands, which means they're natives and whatever like that, because they're worried about getting to some fertilizer. We're going to see a fertilizer crunch in 22, 23. We won't see it for this year because they're still out there like that. And a persistent La Nina favors an early frost, and that's what we're somewhat looking for down in South America. But we're looking, it's already down to the first crop, 22 million metric tons, 89 for the second crop, and 1.7 for the third crop of corn. In Argentina, only 49 million metric tons. So we're going to see a reduction of corn probably in South America for this year. But what we're really looking at is a problem of fertilizer if this whole mess continues to go on in Ukraine and Russia.
So think about our conversation so far about the corn market. How do you manage the risk in the corn?
Well, like I said before, I don't want to lock myself into physical bushels on too large of a percentage. To me, if you're buying crop insurance and you have insured bushels, you know, and someone's willing to go out and spend 25 or 30 cents on a $9 December call option, I might sell that versus a handful of my bushels to get myself a really strong floor. And you say, well, what happens if you go up? Well, then you're going to put $9 versus a few bushels, and that's going to be your best case scenario, in my opinion, not your worst case scenario. How many of you guys have ever sold $9 corn? Now, I would do that on a portion of bushels only if I have insurance against my bushels, okay? Not necessarily the county policy. You're asking for trouble if you're trying to market versus county policy bushels if you don't raise the bushels personally. So if the county has a good year and you don't, that's a terrible situation to be in. But you know what? A lot of folks say, I don't want to spend 20, 30 cents on some sort of a put option scenario. Well, the nice thing about that is if you buy a put or a put spread, and you put yourself in a position without a marginable position on top of it, you put yourself in a position to where if the market plummets, you're going to participate or have a floor under yourself. And if the market goes up, you're participating in a rally. That's a really good situation to be in. Now, if you say, I don't, you know, every time I buy puts, they expire worthless. First of all, I don't think that's the case. But second of all, what a good thing to say. I mean, because what's that mean that's happened? The market's either stayed the same or gone up. So I think you have to have a floor in place with flexibility and don't lock yourself into too many physical bushels. I've had a lot of people ask about basis. What do you think basis is going to do if we don't have a really good crop this year? Basis could be a dynamic situation. So I wouldn't write basis contracts. If you do an HTA, make sure it's the elevator you're going to be doing business with, because this year a lot of folks have found out that not having physical ownership at certain times has cost them a lot of money. So don't give your bushels up too easily.
Matt mentioned the HTAs and the FOs. I called up one of the fellows that I know at the elevator, and I said, I remember back in 2012 when you guys were talking about the farmer having to share in paying the margin calls on HTAs and on futures only. I said, does that still exist? He said, oh, yes. He said it's in very fine print on the back of the contract in what they call boilerplate language. And he said it doesn't say specifically, yes, you'll follow, you know, you will. But he said we weren't to that point yet because we weren't high enough. But it'll come. And that's not a great place to be in either, because what they can do is they can force you to prove that you have the money to cover the margins. So, you know, be very, very careful. And I think Matt's point about basis is just excellent. You know, the futures can go as high as they want to. It's how high is your cash market going to go? That's the key. You know, and as far as if you're using futures, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but you can sell a futures contract, buy a call against it, fix your risk. You know exactly how much you can lose. Now, do you have to make margin calls? Yes, you will, because until you would exercise the call. Or vice versa, you can buy the futures and buy a put, and you have a fixed risk position. You know exactly what you've got. So, you know, that's another way of looking at this. You know, sell the futures, buy the call, at least you know where you're at, and you know exactly what your risk is.
Wheat's a tough one, just because there's no market for it right now, but I had a guy who said, okay, now I'm going to hedge some wheat. You want to sell a contract? And I go, you sure you want to do that? He goes, yeah, what could go wrong? $4 later. But I guarantee you one thing, there will be no aflatoxin, there will be no foreign material docks or nothing this year of wheat. The only problem is there might be a $1 or $2 basis on it. So it's been a challenge. Excellent risk management strategy there, buy, put, call, cover it, and so forth. If you buy a put, the thing to keep in mind is, yeah, if market goes higher, you can roll it up. But one thing to keep in mind, too, is you buy that put, and this market rallies sharply higher, and the market comes right back down to where your put is, you really haven't gained anything a whole lot. Yeah, you've got a price floor, so you got to still do some marketing or keep some marketing in consideration. And what I mean by that is this thing gets nuts. Go ahead and maybe push a little cash out, because if it comes straight back down, you're going to miss the opportunity on it, because buying options right now is tricky because they're juiced and you got to keep an eye on them.
The one thing to keep in mind is 843¾ is the all-time high on corn. Now, we did not have the inflation rate that we have right now at the time that did that. You know, the biggest bull in the world said, don't buy rallies for the last 4 days. Dan Bassey, who I'm talking about, says buy a 25 to 40 cent dip in the corn now. If we see this with the things going on with wheat, if wheat and everything settles down and we can drop 25 to 40 cents, he's going to be a willing buyer to add back to his idea of being long, or in your case, if you want to just hold them like that. Soybeans, Gordy Lynn says $14 to $20, but it might take a while. But he still feels that there's a shot for that to go. There is a couple other guys out there that's saying we could see $10 corn if this inflation runs wild. Now, the biggest thing that I heard last night and this morning and on the radio coming over here today was the talk of very high fuel costs cause the countries, this country, foreign countries, Europe, everybody, to a lot of times sink into a recession. And you have to remember that those recessions can happen. I mean, okay, everybody got, you know, the guys that made $8, $10, $12, they're all getting $15 to $27 now. And most of them are spending all of their increase on filling up their gas tank. You know, so that's some of the things to think about. Do price a little bit of your corn as it goes on up. We're in the 20 to, we don't want to be over 40% priced. But we are rewarding these rallies up to that level. After that, then use crop insurance, use options, or something that way to put a bottom in things. And I do think there's nothing wrong with putting a bottom under more than that 35 to 40% that you might have actually priced, because these are some pretty good levels. But remember, be really careful about pricing 23 crop, because we will or could very easily have fertilizer problems.
Finally, Mike Zuzula, I'll have you manage risk management and kind of give us a final word from you, and the rest of you can follow along, starting with Kurt on that end.
Well, I had nothing to add substantially to what the others said. I agree with them wholeheartedly. I think the one thing that I've tried to contain and maintain is the high, I think, in the grains, in the best time for grain hedgers is going to be the first half this calendar year. I still feel that way. I still feel as though hard red wheat needs to have its day in the sun. We've seen the soft red wheat. So 1384¾ is the 2008 high in the hard red wheat. That's a number that I really want to be seeing and looking at. And if I get it, get some hedges in place. I still have some old crop corn left. I have a lot of new crop corn left. So I'm really eager to do a lot of hedging this month. Target prices will be dependent upon what USDA says tomorrow. But I could see a sub 1.5 carryover after April given what the Western Corn Belt drought's looking at. Final word is thank you again, and take a pen with you, sign up for a trial. Younger guys out there, please think about getting off social media as far as doing your marketing, your risk management, or at least blending together some of the things that history and some of the things we learned 25, 30 years ago but haven't had to learn very much or use very much. I could see a really different world here in the next few years, and I mean that sincerely. So please consider thinking about using someone that does a lot of research like us here.
I believe Zwicker got off the radio about 1 year too early here. He should have stuck around.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Depends on whether he was right or wrong in that year, but yes.
I worked with Dan, and I spent many of hours going up and down the road with him. I enjoy that. One strategy we're doing is if you sold some cash grain and if you're looking to capture it up with limited risk or limited investment, we like a bull call spread in the December corn. Buy the $7 call, sell the $8 call, it's around 22 cents. Market goes up, yeah, you make a dollar minus what you pay for it, but that's one way to be in the marketplace and know what your risk is. Great seeing you again. Good luck this year.
Great pleasure to be here, and I would like to just say what Kurt and what all the rest of them have said. You got to look every day to see there's an option out there that you can use. They're going to be expensive, but you're buying a Cadillac, folks, or a Lexus or something more so. You're going to have to pay a little more for it, but God, look what you're insuring. So thank you for coming. Glad to see you. Listen to Todd on the radio.
I don't think there's ever been a year that it has become more apparent that this is a total world market. This isn't just a United States market anymore. And so because of all the different dynamics when it comes to the trading, I know Ellen mentioned this morning about money flow, and money flow is so extremely important to be able to track. If you're working with someone, talk to them about it, because I'll tell you, it is such a good indicator. And one of the things that kind of excites me is that we've been able to hold the 5-day and the 9-day exponential moving averages, and those are heavily weighted for the last 5 days and the last 9 days, so they give you a little bit better feeling for the current market rather than just the overall average, and we've held on to that. So you know, I think that there's good reason to believe we have a chance to go higher, but please be cautious. You know, it's your farm, and you've got a great opportunity here to be able to lock in profits and make good money.
Jackie brings up a really interesting point about the world situation. I mean, stop and think about it. In August of 2020, if you guys can remember before the derecho event, you had $3 corn into the ADM Decatur. The basis was 15 under, and beans were 870. And in 2020, you raised a 600 million bushel larger corn and bean crop than what you had in 2019. In 2021, you raised a billion bushel larger crop than what you did in 2020. And the bean crop was 200 million bushels larger. So over the course of 2 years, you raised 1.6 billion bushels more corn and almost 800 million bushels more beans, and you've more than doubled the price of corn, and the basis has gotten better. Now, how many times have you guys seen that in your career? It just hasn't happened. It's never happened. And so what Jackie's saying is correct. We don't know what's around the corner. We know what the possibilities are and how exciting this thing can be. But I'll tell you what, if we come in here 2 months from now and for whatever reason the market has dropped and we walked away from the table where we could have cashed in big time and we chose not to, we're going to be pretty upset with ourselves. There's tools to use. Make sure you do something with it. Don't sit on your hands. And I am glad to be here. It's pretty awesome, Todd.
It is awesome.
I asked him not too long ago, are we having this year?
You
know, because I was looking forward to coming. But thanks for coming out, guys.
That was Matt Bennett Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for the annual Spring Outlook, now sponsored by Will Ag and Farm Doc. If you'd like to join us next year, I'm sure we'll be there on the first or second Tuesday of the month. Put it in your calendar right now. Thank you for joining us on this edition of Commodity Week. Again, it was recorded on Tuesday, the 8th day of March. Our thanks go to our panelists at the Beef House and here on Commodity Week, including Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Mike Zuzlow from GlobalComResearch.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.